Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you are a fellow Bible thumper, prepared to be thumped. This is Wretched Radio. Is it possible right now you have an unprecedented opportunity to help somebody in your own home? Is it possible, Mom and Dad, you have a unique opportunity courtesy of coronavirus to spend more time with your children than ever before? And is it possible this is God's opportunity for you to dig into your child's heart and discover what is going on in there so that you can perhaps deal with some of the issues that have been causing some consternation? Perhaps your child, or frankly any relationship that you have, has been worrying you. Might this be a chance for you to get in there and help them? Whether it is a child, whether it is a parent, whether it is a sibling, whether it is somebody at church, would like to present to you something that is going to strike you as a little bit radical and a little bit hard. And if we're not careful, it could be misunderstood and misabused. But I would like to suggest to you that perhaps this is the element that has been missing in your relationship to help a person that you know and love who is struggling. Now, I'm going to probably put this in the context of parent and child the most, but this goes well beyond that. It is a church member. It is somebody in your neighborhood who is struggling with an issue, and you can't seem to figure out a way to help them come out of it. This applies to all relationships. Courtesy of Paul David Tripp, a book, we haven't talked about this book for a long time, Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. People in need of change, helping people in need of change. In other words, you and me who are needy people, who need the Holy Spirit, who need God's transforming grace, we get to participate in helping people in that same process. And maybe you and I have been trying to help somebody and we've been missing an element. This is going to strike you a little bit hard, so let's make sure that we don't cross a line here. Tripp writes, I'm deeply persuaded that the foundation for people transforming ministry is not, I'm going to add a word, mere sound theology. It is love. Without love, our theology is a boat without oars. Ask yourself this question. Mom and Dad, your teenager, giving you fits. Have you been perhaps trying to parent them the way that you parented them when they were 4, failing to recognize they're now 14 and it maybe requires something a little bit different? And is it possible that we have been dumping truckloads of good theology on our kids, a most excellent thing, but we haven't been doing it with love? And now I know what you're thinking. Of course I love my kid. That's why I teach them this stuff. Maybe this will challenge you a little bit, or give you a bruise. The hope of every sinner does not rest in theological answers, but in the love of Christ for his own. Without it, we have no hope personally, relationally, or eternally. In other words, this maybe is an adjustment. We're not going to throw out theology with the love bathwater. Theology is crucial. But what does Paul say that our theology is like without love? It can get in there. It can help. But if it isn't being applied from a correct heart to motivate a broken heart, then it's not going to be the salve that gets the most work done. Make no mistake about it. If you've got a saved child and you just teach them theology, it's going to have an effect. But what effect? It could likely teach them morals and values, but it won't teach them to love Jesus more. And that is ultimately what we want for that person. But we sometimes fail to remember we've got to get to the heart, too. Now, we do that through the brain in teaching truth, but what Tripp is after here is that we are actually entering into somebody's world with an amount of love and empathy and sympathy that they feel the truth. We cannot be a part of Christ's life-giving work without being willing to lay down our own. Ask yourself the question, how do you respond to somebody who just gives you a theology dump? And please note, we are not low on theology here. We love theology. This is a singular point. Are we delivering it in a way where the person feels it's coming from our heart because we love them, we're willing to sacrifice for them, we actually care for them, we love them? Recently, I received an email from a buddy of mine. I'll leave his name out of it, even though this is nothing but positive. And this email, I'm telling you, he could have said in the middle of this email that he sent to me that, you know, I think that I would like to take a jackhammer and pummel your body with it for the next 45 hours. And I would have said, oh, he sure does love me, because it was an email written to me about a disagreement or a correction and some instruction was so ladled in love. Frankly, I wouldn't have cared what he said to me at that point. That's what Tripp is after, that we enter into our children's or the relationship's world with love. That's what's motivating us, because those of us who love theology, we rightly understand that it is good theology that corrects thinking and that fixes emotions. It strengthens faith. It does all of those things. The encouragement from Tripp is, are you doing it so that they know you love them and care for them and desire the best for them? Or is it possible they just kind of see us as, well, they're another lecture, another corrective? Now, there's a woman that he's using in this particular book as an example. She's very discouraged, almost paralyzed. What would your goal be? You can offer wisdom. That's good. That clarifies confusion and makes the situation bearable. That is wise and right. It is grace to offer her understanding, comfort, and hope. It is good to function as her advocate where appropriate. But a deeper focus must shape this counseling moment. And this is not in a clinical setting. This is in our home with our kids and our relationship with our spouses. God is continuing his work of transformation in this woman's heart and life. He has brought her to the end of herself, revealing the fruit of her choices and behavior. God is in the process of revealing her heart. His goal is that she would be conformed to the image of his son. This isn't low theology here. To be freed from the bondage of certain sins and one step closer to the freedom of worshiping the Creator. His goal is that he would consistently rule her thoughts and motives, that increasingly her identity would be rooted in him rather than in the soil of personal achievement and the acceptance of others. In other words, God is wanting to do something profound with this woman who is hurting, who is anxious, who is depressed. That's our world right now. That is the corona world that we are living in. People are terrified. They're scared. They're reaching out. They're Googling. They're ordering. I even read that there's an increase in people in North Korea trying to get their hands on Bibles. They're grasping and groping. Here we are, and we've got great theology. Terrific. Thumbs up. Amen. All day. Every day. But how do we wield it? How do we use it? How do we apply it? If it's merely, okay, you're out for a walk and you see the neighbor coming and they're physically trembling, biting their nails. Hey, neighbor, what's up? I'm just terrified of death. Well, you know what? I'm so glad that you are, because the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Take care. And off you go. Now, you've spoken truth. You didn't say anything wrong. What Tripp is encouraging from us is that we love them as we teach them, because God is looking to do something greater than just fix their thinking. And there's a great danger for those of us who know a lot of theology and love a lot of theology. we parse it out, we dole it out, sometimes we dump truck it out without any context of what that knowledge is supposed to do. We think that it's going to fix their problem. And I don't think this is just a male thing. You know all the stand-up shtick. The woman says, hey, I've got this, I'm really struggling with this. And the guy goes, well, then I'll call a guy. He'll get this thing fixed up and we'll get that thing ordered and it'll be taken care of. You don't need to worry about that. And what does she say? Not what I was looking for, dear. It's not that she doesn't want a solution, but she wants you to care. And if all we do is tell somebody who is hurting or fearful, hey, you shouldn't be, you know what? I'll tell you what to fear. Fear God, who can kill your body and cast you into hell. Gotta go. Okay, you've given them a corrective, but did it get applied? Did it cause them to love God more or to understand their need for God more? Because if we don't have it in that package, then what are we basically doing? In a sense, we're being a little bit pharisaical in that we are simply dumping laws and rules on them, but not for the purpose of increasing their desire to love God more. We're simply trying to fix a problem, a behavioral correction, but we aren't looking to get to the heart of the issue, and that is the heart of the issue. We will continue doing that next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us today. We do always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day listening to us here at Wretched Radio. Are you also one of those wretch-like people who checks out Wretched TV on a daily basis? Good for you. If you don't, please do. Wretched TV is our spiffy little half-hour TV show. You can check your local listings or watch the episodes on wretched.org/TV. It's hosted by Todd. You'll find live witnessing encounters, discussions on theological issues, and various other topics that cross the Christian's path in this daily life of ours. As the saying goes, you can check your local listings or watch full-length Wretched TV episodes at wretched.org/TV. Well, you probably guessed that already. Full-length episodes, wretched.org/TV. Thanks very much to our gospel partners. Their generosity is what makes all things Wretched possible. If you are able and would consider it, we'd appreciate that. Visit wretched.org/donate. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Not to say I told you so, but I've been sharing with you how Tomorrow Clubs think kids camps in Eastern Europe meeting weekly to hear the gospel. Kids get saved, parents get saved, and churches get revitalized. Here is just one example so I can say, I told you so.
There is actually was a dying church, only two families. So this lady, she's a school teacher. Someone told her about this village, so she came, and believe it or not, she has about 40 kids coming to the Tomorrow Club from the villages around. So the whole church is filled with kids.
Love hearing that. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe? Kids are getting saved, families getting saved, and churches revitalized. $30 a month, 30 disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God, is Wretched's latest evangelistic resource, perfect for sharing with those who don't understand who Jesus is.
People love to question the divinity of Jesus Christ. Phil Johnson, what would be one proof that Jesus Christ is God?
The calendar is based on
it. That's a pretty big proof, but we have compiled 21 more proofs Jesus is God in a booklet titled The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God. You know somebody who needs to know Jesus. Get your copies. Terrific evangelistic booklet. Wretched.org/22.
The Man Who Split Time is a must read for every skeptic. So we challenge you. Get it. Read it. Then give it away. The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs Jesus is God. Get your copy at wretched.org/time. Wretched.org/time. If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. heartsforthelost.com.
Books of the Bible. Titus was an apprentice and fellow missionary with Paul, left on the island of Crete to organize the churches there. The Book of Titus is a manual regarding the character, behavior, and doctrine of church leaders and church members. All of these commands are grounded in the gospel of Jesus Christ, what he has done for us, and who we are in him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Imagine you just had a stinker of a day. This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps that's not so hard to imagine, but it was a beating. You took a drubbing. You had an experience, and you wanted to share it with somebody. You call up a friend. You open up to your spouse. How would you feel if you told your pal, your loved one, only to have him or her respond with a lecture on the fact that you really made a wrong decision and you knew he knew of a better way to do things, and if you'd just given him a call, he could have saved you a lot of pain? Not exactly what you're looking for, is it? And I wonder if those of us who are Bible thumpers, maybe, just maybe, need to feel a little bit thumped by some words from Paul Tripp that encourages us to bring love with our theology. You know what that's like, don't you? In fact, you know people like that. They can't help themselves. You tell them, you know what? I think that I've got symptoms of coronavirus. Well, you know, Fauci said that, and Brick said that, and with the World Health Organization and the CDC, they did, and Trump is going to, and we're going to be lifting the ban, and if we got a virus, and you're going, thanks. Thanks a lot. That is not what is needed, at least not exclusively. We want people to enter into our world and to, you know, empathize, feel with us. And I wonder if those of us who love theology need that word, especially as a parent. This is a lifelong thing. It is staggering to me. I actually am relatively cognizant of this, and yet I biff it regularly. I can say a completely different thing to my children than I would say to somebody of a similar age. If somebody at church, a young person at church said, I'm thinking about buying a car. I'd go, cool. What are you thinking about getting? I'm thinking about getting a Dodge Dart. Yeah, really? Wow. What year? What model? 82. It's really super cool. Far out. If my child came to me and said, hey, Dad, I'm thinking about buying a car. Really? What's wrong with your old car? I thought that was a perfectly fine car. It only has 52,000 miles on it. Why would you possibly be thinking about buying a new car? Do you realize, like right now, that to add to debt in such an unstable season with the economy, I think maybe you'd be better off putting your money in the bank and taking the bus if you need to. Now, what in the world just happened there? Why am I more inclined to be less loving with my family than I am with strangers? And that perhaps is the lesson that we need to learn, courtesy of a Paul David Tripp, Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands. Scripture highlights four things when it calls us to love someone in a way that promotes God's work of heart change. Every aspect of love promotes relationships where God's goals are central. One, enter the person's world. Isn't that what Jesus did? Incarnate the love of Christ. Identify with suffering. And accept them with an agenda to help them. This is not a dismissal of theology. This is not a call to liberalism and just, ooh, God's just crying with ya. Ooh, I just feel so bad. And I'm just going to cry all day long too. That's not what this is. But we want people to feel that we feel with them, because we do. Right? From the book, it is not the problem the person wants to talk about. We can focus on the problem and miss the person in the middle of it. Biblical personal ministry includes problem solving, but it must be person-focused. Aren't we inclined to be problem fixers, just like the insensitive husband who just fixes the problem? Is this suddenly a call? Oh, you're becoming a feminist. No, that's not what this is. This is about becoming Christ-like and entering into people's worlds. And right now, we have a chance to do that. If you've got a stray teenager, now this, they're not going to come to you and say, you know, I sure have been sullen lately. Would like to talk about it. Or I've got this relational issue on Facebook. I'm probably not going to do it. So how do you get in there? And is it possible that so many teens won't let us in because we are knocking on the door the wrong way? They don't feel that we feel with them. They just know we want to fix them. And that's not what they seem to be after. We are. And what this is encouraging is love on them. Get in there because you care for them. You want to enter their world to live through it with them. And of course, you have an agenda of helping them. That's different than fixing them. Yeah, we want to fix them, but it should be after we enter with them. From Tripp, second, the entry gate is not a particular situation or circumstance in the person's life. Beneath these are deeper heart struggles that are God's focus. Nor is the entry gate another person or a problem in relationship. We need to resist the tendency to be entirely problem-focused. When we have a problem focus as we listen to people, we'll be like someone at the shooting gallery. Bing, bing, bing. What's the next problem? Bing. Oh, here's the Bible. Bing. There's the next. Oh, you got bing. That's not what's needed, especially with teenagers. You do not ask somebody, so what are the problems in your life? Instead, what are you struggling with in the midst of this? Or what has this person in its grip right now? Those are the things that I want to try to be figuring out when I want to go about the business of helping somebody. There are bigger questions. There are deeper questions. When we speak to people's real struggles and they respond, this person has heard me. This person understands me. I want more of this kind of help. That's what happens when we enter in because we care for them. Now, there's no doubt you and I care for our teenagers. Do they doubt that? Or do they just see the big problem solver coming their way? Listen with purpose. Focus on the person in the middle of the problem. Train yourself to listen for four things that will show you where the person is struggling. One, listen for emotional words. I'm angry. I'm afraid. I can't stop crying. Okay, listen for those. Listen for interpretive words. This shouldn't happen. I guess I'm getting what I deserve. I wonder if it's even worth getting up in the morning. Are you listening for those things? That's their heart speaking. Listen for self-talk. I'm such a failure. This always happens to me. I don't have what it takes to do this or face this or cope with this. Finally, listen for God talk, because every single emotional issue that we have, good, bad, or otherwise, is a statement about God. We are saying something about how we understand God in a moment with our emotions. So listen for that. I thought I was doing what God wanted. He simply doesn't hear my prayers. How could God let this happen to me? So as you listen to these things, look for a theme like anger or fear or guilt or hopelessness. Then grab hold of that theme, meet the person in the midst of that struggle, and incarnate the loving Lord so that he or she may be able to see him better because she can't now. Do you hear the difference? Your spouse, I'm so frustrated with these kids. I don't know why they behave this way. Well, what time are they going to bed at night? Oh, okay. Maybe that's the key to the issue, but that's not the key to somebody's heart. That's not the key to entering into the world. Why would we be motivated to do this? Because this is some psychological or biblical counseling trick? No, because this is the way that Jesus dealt with us. He entered our world, and he continues to enter our world. We have a sympathetic high priest, not merely a theologically sound with good advice high priest, which he is. We have a sympathetic high priest. Maybe right now there is an opportunity with you for your family members. to enter into a little bit of their world. You've got that time now with your kids. Let them know that you've heard their struggle. Maybe just make, look, I need help with this. Maybe you just sit with your kid and you just let them dump. Don't fix a thing and just feel it. Don't be doing what I know that I do. I start Rolodexing Bible verses and I start, well, here's the problem. I remember when I did that. Yep, okay, you're that age. Yep, got it. Okay, here's what you need to do. Maybe just listen and know that you feel with them. Let that person know that God is there and that he understands the struggle too. Let the person know you will stand with her or him. Let them know that they have an advocate in you. One of the most common struggles in crisis is the feeling that you are all alone. And your teenagers, they feel like pretty much they're in crisis all the time. They know that you know how to help them. But if they aren't tapping into you for that wisdom and knowledge, if there is a barrier or a wall or downright animosity, maybe it's because we haven't been as incarnational as we need to be. Think on Jesus, who took on flesh to take on our sins, to be a sympathetic high priest. Focus on him and then become like him for somebody who is hurting. This is Wretched Radio.
It is ingenious when you think about it. The Mission Ball is a simple soccer ball covered with biblical text, an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim the gospel. Because the Mission Ball is covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation written in ink that doesn't come off very easily. Find out how you can support the Mission Ball. Go to themissionball.org. Themissionball.org.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. One name is Jehovah Tsidkenu, the Lord of our righteousness. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21 tells us that God made Jesus, who knew no sin to be sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Besides needing a haircut, is it possible you need a change of clothes? This is Wretched Radio. Anybody else have a new sense of appreciation for barbers? Anybody but me? I know that I sure could use a scalpel put to this noggin. Yikes!
Scalpel? Are you looking to shave?
Yeah, pretty much. The
or whole perform thing. Perform surgery.
Right down, right. Do you go to a barber shop, Joey? I mean a barber shop. Or do you go to one of those frou-frou-y kind of places?
I go to Fantastic Sam's because they're close and they're cheap. I used to go to the place that called itself a barber shop, but just looked like it, but actually was just full of stylists. Okay.
I go to a barber shop, and these guys who cut hair are amazing. They with the razor thing, I call it a scalpel, razor. I don't want to get all technical with the barber tools here. But they use that thing, man, and they slice it. And I would cut my head off with that stuff. And they just wield that bad boy like it's a butter knife. Unbelievable. Can't wait to go back because I look like I should be in the Monkees right now.
I look like my most embarrassing 90s moments. I just need the part down the middle and shave up underneath, and I'm back
in
the grunge
era. I'm
feeling
a little more like 1978, 79 right about now. I'm looking for some of those checkered bell bottoms to match my haircut. Lack of, actually. Is it possible you need a haircut and a new change of clothes? Paul Tripp, oof-da. A book that demands we consider our relationships with people before we go about the business of changing and fixing them. This perhaps applies most to your children. Maybe it applies to a loved one, a relationship, or not. How do we help people love Jesus more? Not get better. That's not the goal. You don't want to fix people. That's the wrong goal. We want people to love Jesus more. Colossians 3. 12 through 17, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Does that define you? Does that describe you that you are compassionate, kind, humble, gentle, patient? Or are you more like, well, sadly me, in that, just give me the problem. I'm going to give you the solution. Paul Tripp saying it's time for a change. From his book, Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands, an encouragement to get in there. So here's an example for your consideration. You receive note, a word, a phone call that somebody that you know has been abandoned by their spouse. They received a note from their husband. I'm leaving you. I'm out of here. What would you say? Seriously, think it through for just a moment. We might, because it's such an extreme emotional break, we might go, oh no, I am so sorry. Why did he leave? Has this been going on for a long time? Did he have an affair? We start to try to figure things out so that we can say, what you need to do is this, then he's going to come back home. Maybe because we want to be clothed with compassion and humility and gentleness and patience and be incarnational and enter into their world. These would be some better questions for your consideration. These are questions I would never think of, ever think of. And this is going to just slay me because I actually just received an email from a woman who's been married for a number of years, whose husband professes to be a believer, and who informed her, I want a divorce. Bang. And you know, I don't know what my questions were. Do you belong to a good local church? Okay, right question. In other words, you know, can you get your pastor and elders involved in this situation to help you and walk alongside you? And I missed any opportunity to be like Jesus in this situation. I think I offered no, that's terrible. I'm really sorry for that. Do you belong to a good church? Boom, I go into fix it mode. How's about this? What came to your mind when he told you this? What are you struggling with most right now? What are you facing now that you thought you would never face? What are you feeling? What are you afraid of right now without any agenda to fix? You're just demonstrating, I care. I'll only speak for myself, but I suspect I'm not alone in this. We're so often like people who see an accident. Somebody gets hit on their bicycle, and we go running up. Did you look both ways before you crossed? Were you wearing your helmet? Did you have your helmet buckled up? Did you wait for the light? Did you have a go sign? Why didn't you walk your bike across the street here? You'd go, what is the matter with you? They just got hit by a car. And the same question applies. What's the matter with me? I was just told that a woman's life was absolutely devastated by a husband who professes to be a follower of Jesus Christ, saying, I'm not going to act like Jesus. I'm going to act the very opposite. I am not going to be faithful to you till death do us part. I'm going to act like the devil, and I'm going to divorce you. Do you belong to a good church? Describe how you see God right now. Whoa, that's different. Describe how you see God right now. Your husband just told you he's walking out the door. Tell me what you're thinking about God right now. And this is... These are not diagnostic questions as if you're the physician in an office. Uh-huh. And does it hurt when you raise your elbow that way? So tell me, can you pick things up that are heavy? Those have its place. And you can actually be gleaning knowledge out of these questions. But these are not diagnostic questions for the sake of fixing it. Do you ask questions like this? Your teenager comes home. They didn't get on the team. Well, I guess you'll have to try. You know what? I told you. Can't be staying up late playing those video games. Tired. You're never going to get on the team if you keep doing those things. Time to grow up, son. Okay. Good advice. Maybe not exactly what fosters a relationship. I wonder if that's a big part of the reason that we have such a disconnect between teen and parent. We're just in fix-it mode, not in love mode. Do you feel like God is asking you to do the impossible? Do you feel hopeless? What questions do you wish you could ask your husband right now? What questions do you wish you could ask God? Do you see what he's doing here? He's doing questions that are incarnational. If you remember, enter into the person's world, incarnate the love of Christ, identify with suffering, accept, hear them with an agenda. Yes, we do want to fix, but that's not on the front burner. When you can't sleep, what thoughts keep you awake? That is an outstanding question. Isn't that a good one for all of us? Yeah, ask yourself that question right now. If you ever wake up with fits in the middle of the night or you can't sleep, you toss and tumble, you wake up way too early because something on your is on your mind, what is it? Finances? Uh-oh, that's instructive, isn't it? It's going to tell you what maybe is consuming too much of your care. Maybe it's revealing that it's too much of an idol. Maybe it reveals that you're not trusting in the Lord enough. Look at what a diagnostic question that would be to ask ourselves. When you can't sleep, what thoughts keep you awake? What about asking somebody who's going through a hard time? What part of the situation is getting to you the most? What is that doing? It's showing care. It's being thoughtful. And it's also helping you to understand what's going on in their heart so that at the right time, in due season, you can give them the correct theology bomb that's going to help them. What regrets do you struggle with? What do you look back and think, oh, if only I had? Are you blaming yourself for this? If so, how come? What do you think you should have done differently that you look back and go, oh, I could just kick myself for that? Why? Those are all incarnational questions. And they are questions that are really helpful, especially if you're going to be counseling somebody on a long-term basis. It's protection for you, because if you're dealing with somebody with anger issues, for instance, and all you do is try to fix their fury, and they don't think that you care about them, you can count on it. That anger is going to get aimed at you. People pick up what you're laying down. You are offering a living example when you enter in. It gives evidence of what the Lord can do. It gives evidence of what the Lord is like. It keeps Jesus central. The most important encounter in ministry is not the person's encounter with us, but his encounter with Christ. Our job is to simply set up that encounter so that God would help people seek his forgiveness, comfort, restoration, strength, and wisdom. As an ambassador not only delivers the message of the king, he incarnates it as well. He stands in the king's place, who does not merely bark out orders and offer ways to fix a problem. He is a sympathetic king who enters into our world because he actually genuinely cares. Isn't that why we cast our cares on him? Because he cares for us. And if we are going to do good ministry and actually help people, we need to care for people by demonstrating love, by being incarnational, and then adding theology as is appropriate to help them to love Jesus more, not just be fixed. This is Wretched Radio. First, the good news from the Philippines.
Every day in the whole Philippines, there are thousands of new believers being baptized. There are many churches that are being planted right now. The church is strong here and ready to carry on the Great Commission.
That's excellent news, but there is some bad news.
A Bible study leader is not able to provide Bibles for them because he himself do not have any support for the ministry. He's having a hard time even to find his transportation going to the Bible study.
That's not good at all, but it gets worse, I'm afraid.
Filipinos cannot afford to buy a Bible because poverty, and they are very much engrossed trying to make a living for their family. So no more funds to buy a Bible.
You and I can change that for just $5 per Bible with Bible League International. We can bless our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. How many Bibles could you send? Wretched.org/Bible. Wretched.org/Bible.
Picture, if you will, a Saturday night. You're sitting at your computer and you decide to watch an edifying video. Maybe John MacArthur. And the next thing you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you are knee-deep in YouTube watching a baby giraffe trying to stand up again. Oh, been there, done that. It's happened to all of us. Instead of watching random videos and losing all sense of time, visit the home of all things wretched, wretched.org. There are hundreds of hours of biblically-based TV and radio programs and a library full of hand-picked content specifically for you. Over 2,400 30-minute TV programs with subjects ranging from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics. Wretched's hour-long radio program, posted every day, tackles tough issues Christians face today. So the next time you're wandering around the web watching giraffe and cat videos, why not head over to wretched.org, the home of all things wretched. Wretched.org.
If an youareapreborn.org/wretched supporter providing ultrasounds and even ultrasound machines, this is a great big thank you from South Florida.
This is our sonogram room, but we call it the miracle room because our mission is to save lives, save souls in South Florida. And in this very room, that specific thing happens. But for many years, we didn't have much support for this miracle room. Thank you for the new machine that is on its way. Thank you for your ministry to the unborn.
Ultrasounds save lives, but preborn clinics need ultrasound machines first. If you could provide a machine or if you could provide a $28 ultrasound, whatever it is, your support for preborn, it saves lives, it saves souls, it saves families. You can become a preborn supporter at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the propitiation for our sins. Propitiation means a wrath-removing sacrifice. Jesus bore God's wrath on our behalf, and in return, we receive his righteous standing before God the Father. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
We see their true colors.
Stop.
This is Wretched Radio.
Just stop. Go to your corner. Think about what you've done.
Not that this will likely help you to sing if you don't have as good of a voice as I do, but just a thought for your consideration. Let's just imagine this is way out there. No, this is entirely out there, and we don't want to be blasphemous. But just imagine that you're the most powerful person on the planet. I hesitate to say imagine you are God because I don't think that's a needed scenario. But imagine you're the most powerful person on the planet, and all of the people who are lesser than you decided to get together because they really appreciate you, dare I say love you, and they are going to sing a song about you. You'd be pleased with that, wouldn't you? Now, here's a question. Which voice would you be most pleased with? Now, on the surface, of course, the one who has perfect pitch, like Cyndi Lauper, who has perfect pitch.
Oh.
I don't precisely have perfect. She does have perfect pitch.
Oh, does actually. She? She yeah. Doesn't use it.
I think she's almost 70, so well, I think we can cut her a little bit of slack at this point.
Maybe the pitch she hits is right, the way she hits it.
Okay, voice. It's her style.
It's her style.
Joey.
I don't like her style. Other
but
people
she,
do.
She nails the pitch, or perhaps whoever has the sweetest voice would be initially like, oh, I just love hearing that sound. But perhaps on further reflection, would it be more pleasing that if you could identify the voice of the one who is just croaking it out, but who is enthusiastic and demonstrated even by the look on their face and the volume of their terrible toned voice, they must really care about me because they're willing to look really dopey and they don't care what they sound like because they simply have to express their gratitude and love for me. Wouldn't that ultimately be the voice that is most pleasing to you? So all that to say, if you have a wonderful voice, God doesn't appreciate you as much as he appreciates me when I sing. That's what I was trying to say, right? Okay, not precisely what I was trying to say, but isn't that maybe an encouragement to those of us who are terrible at singing? That if we are willing to not feel shame because we love God so much, we don't care what the servants think when we're singing to the king, maybe that's a motivation for us to just open up our pipes like we do when we're in our cars by ourselves. I will never forget being in that little village, in that little church in Ukraine. This was an experience. It was the size of a single car garage, old school single car garage from a house built like in the 40s. That was the church. About 40 chairs set up, and they're smashed in there as tight as it could possibly be. And there was, I can't even remember what the instrumentation was, if any. I think it might have been a cappella because there wasn't room for a piano and they couldn't afford a piano anyway. And these old babushkas, I'm telling you, I could actually hear it and go, wow, they're really terrible at singing. And I'm horrible at singing. That's how bad they're singing. What? I'm terrible at it. They were worse, if that's even possible. And I thought, the Lord must love to hear this sweet, sweet sound, because it is coming from a heart that doesn't care what people think about their pipes. They have to express their love for the Lord. Mm. By the way, speaking of Tomorrow Clubs, which is why I was there. If you don't support a Tomorrow Club, that I was visiting a Tomorrow Club that came out of this little church. There were more kids than there were. It was really quite fascinating. It was babushkas, old people, mostly women, but not exclusively. There were a fair number of men there, but it was still probably about 70-30 in Ukraine. But dozens and dozens of kids, because they would come to this church because of the Tomorrow Clubs, which are like kids' clubs that meet during the week. They love on the kids. They give them little treats. Believe me, they're sparse. And it's not like the Cracker Barrel being served up for the kids. They get some crackers and they get some juice and they get loved on by these babushkas who teach them the gospel, and they come to church. It's absolutely magnificent. If you don't support your own Tomorrow Club, would encourage you to do so. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched, TomorrowClubs.org/wretched, $30 a month. You're going to be discipling 30 kids. And speaking of discipling kids, we're seeing the true colors in a Harvard Magazine article. This one's kind of hot right now in Christian circles because, yikes, it reveals the heart of the unbelievers toward Christians. You say, but we've got a constitution to protect us. I say, it ain't going to protect us when you have got darkness that can be unbridled and unrestricted. It's going to go after the light. Case in point, in China, police are arresting Christians. Do you remember the story of the pastor? It's a 5,000-member house church led by Pastor Wang Yi. I don't know that we know where he is, because he was sentenced to, I think, 9 years in a, well, it's basically a labor camp, because he was witnessing to people in China. Several members of that church were arrested by communist authorities for participating in an online Easter worship service on Zoom in order to cease all religious activity. That's cracking down, y'all. They can't even meet as a church with one another on Zoom. Six leaders were arrested and detained by the Public Security Bureau. Why can't that happen in America? You say, well, because we aren't communists. Tempted to make a Bernie Sanders crack, not gonna do it. But this is the human heart and its attitude being revealed toward his Christ ones. Somebody sent me it was a pretty good sermon illustration, actually. A fellow has been basically a high profile guy in a corporation, and he was the senior VP. But he didn't think the CEO and the CFO was, let's do the CEO, the COO, and the CFO. They weren't running the place very well. So what did he do? He tries to take over the corporation so that he can run it because he knows best. What happens? He doesn't have as much power, and he gets kicked out. He gets fired. Well, he had some disgruntled people. About a third of the employees came with him. Now, he can't do a thing. He does not have the ability to kick out the CEO, CFO, and the COO because he's out. And he's got a third of the people that are with him that are furious at the leaders of the organization. They can't get to the leaders. They know that they can't crumble the corporation. But who can they get at? That's right. The workers, the employees. That's analogous to the devil, who tried to overthrow the Trinitarian Godhead, three persons, one God. He failed, took a third of the angels, got booted with him. They didn't leave. They got kicked out. They can't get to God, but they sure can get to us. And that's what they try to do. And that's what we see in China. The devil working through people who hate Christ. Harvard Magazine. Homeschooled kids now account for roughly 3 to 4% of school-aged children in the United States, a number equivalent to those attending charter schools and larger than the number currently in parochial schools. And may the number increase. Elizabeth Bartholet, by the way, this is Harvard Magazine, don't forget, Wasserstein Public Interest Professor of Law and Faculty Director at the Laws Schools Child Advocacy Program, sees risks for children and society in homeschooling and recommends a presumptive ban on the practice. Homeschooling, she says, not only violates children's rights to a, quote, meaningful education, and their right to be protected from potential child abuse, oh, but may keep them from contributing positively to a democratic society. Well, first of all, we're not a democratic society. We're a representative republic, Harvard professor. Nevertheless, are you kidding me? If there's any place where any semblance of patriotism is being taught, it ain't in the public schools. Quote, we have an essentially unregulated regime in the area of homeschooling. Only about a dozen states have rules about the level of education needed by parents who homeschool. And yet statistic after statistic demonstrates homeschool kids do better on the SAT scores than the public school says. But this practice can isolate children. Some of the parents don't even know how to read or write themselves. I'm not making this up. One benefit of seeing children to school at age 4 or 5 is the teachers are mandated reporters to alert authorities about neglect. What a slanderous accusation. This is a woman who hates homeschooling. Oh, why is that? Up to 90% are driven by conservative Christian beliefs and seek to remove their children from mainstream culture, noting some of these parents are extreme religious ideologues who question science and promote female subservience and white supremacy. You know, I've been to a lot of homeschool conventions, and I have not seen one book on how to teach your kids how to be white supremacists. I haven't seen it. What does she want instead? We need these kids to be going to public schools so that they can be exposed to community values, social values, democratic values, ideas about non-discrimination and tolerance, and other people's viewpoints. In other words, we don't want them to be Christians. She clearly states, we think parents, should they really have 24/7 control, essentially authoritarian control over their children from 0 to 18? I think that's dangerous. Well, one of us would be wrong, madam. Don't be surprised if the screws tighten on homeschooling next. Why? Because darkness hates the light, and there's no difference between the darkness in America and the darkness in China. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.